You're listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. Kit Beasley, former head of finance at Triodos Bank, was a speaker at Hawkwood Seed Festival in July this year. In this episode, he tells us about delivering Triodos' Brexit strategy, how banks can help in the fight against climate change, and what led him to leave mainstream banking.
I qualified as a chartered accountant originally after an economics degree. And then that was back in the 80s when greed is good and all that sort of stuff, banking deregulation, big bang. Then went on into financial services in the early 90s, worked in international banking and international insurance and consumer finance and then a building society. Then kind of decided that I didn't really like the way that financial services worked. Too much self-interest, not enough concern about fellow workers, environment, society. I decided to stop chasing salary and promotion and stuff, and instead moved to Triodos Bank. So I've been at Triodos Bank for 10 and a half years now. I was head of finance for 9 years, and then gradually also took on head of risk. And then for the last 18 months, I have been the head of Brexit implementation, just making sure that the bank was ready for whatever Brexit might throw at us. Just delivered that project. So actually, I'm just about to leave Triodos. So I'm now a trustee. This isn't going to be the full-time job, but I'm now a trustee of the Finance Innovation Lab, which was set up by the Institute of Chartered Accountants and WWF. And it's a charity that aims to find ways to make the financial system fairer, more democratic, and more sustainable. So basically, I'm going to carry on doing what Triodos does, but from outside Triodos, and I'm going to be looking for other ways to do that as well.
You said you've just delivered on the Brexit implementation strategy, but Brexit hasn't even been delivered on yet. So how does that work?
We had to be ready for Brexit with no deal, because Triodos Bank in the UK relied on EU passporting to operate in the UK. If we left with no deal, which was what we were told was going to happen in February this year, then immediately our license to operate would have ceased. So we had to be ready for that. So what we had to do is set up a new UK subsidiary, get it a banking license, and put in place all of the governance structures and so on to make that a reality, and then to transfer our £1 billion balance sheet across from the branch to the subsidiary. So we're now operating as Triodos Bank UK Limited, wholly owned subsidiary of Triodos Bank NV in the Netherlands, trying really still to operate as one bank across Europe. Absolutely no change in our mission, just a change in legal structure. And we've tried to do that with as little disruption as possible to customers and what we're trying to achieve. It's just been a massive distraction, but we've tried to minimise that.
You mentioned the mission of Triodos. For people who might listen to this who don't know much about Triodos, can you describe the bank and its values?
Okay. So the bank was set up really with the purpose of enabling people to use their money consciously for positive social, environmental, and cultural good. Set up by four economists back in about 1980 in the Netherlands. And actually their purpose wasn't really to set up a bank. That wasn't their intention. It's just that enabling people to use money for positive good, they concluded that the best way to do that was actually to have a bank that facilitated that happening. So that's where Triodos came from. Now operates in the UK and in Belgium and Spain and Germany, has an agency in France, as well as the original branch in the Netherlands. And so we've been operating in the UK since, I think, 1995, something like that. For a long time, we've been trying to make sure that people's money is directed towards those things that society really needs to be, or the problems that society needs to be addressed, including climate change. So 25 years ago, we financed Ecotricity's first wind turbine, sort of just over the hill from here. and we set up something called the Wind Fund, which was effectively the UK's first crowdfunding for renewable energy, which later became Triodos Renewables and later still became Thrive Renewables, which is now a separate company. So kind of, you know, it's been spun off, if you like.
Finance and sustainability are kind of usually pegged as not quite enemies, but kind of opposing things. So what's it like trying to bring those two things together?
Actually, it's been really rewarding. I mean, in the 10 and a half years that I've been at Triodos, I have learned so much about the power of the financial system and money to do either good things or bad things. You know, since the climate accord was or the Paris Agreement was signed, big banks have still poured about $1.9 trillion of funding into fossil fuels. There are banks that deal with corrupt regimes that there's all sorts of places, and these banks are all using our money. Same goes for investment companies, investment funds, and actually for our pension funds as well. So I've learned a huge amount about the sort of the bad stuff, if you like, that banks and the financial system do, but also about the power of the financial system to make good stuff happen. You know, if we chose to direct money in more positive ways that were better for society, better for the planet, and the scale of that challenge is huge. The Bank of England recently published some information which showed that to get onto a transition path towards keeping the climate, the temperature increase below 2 degrees, we need to shift something like, we need to kind of halve the amount of money that the financial system or capital that the financial system is allocating to fossil fuels, from about $30 trillion to about $15 trillion. We need to double the amount that's going into renewables, from something like, I don't know, 6 or 7 trillion to kind of 12, 13 trillion. And we need to more than double the amount that's going into energy efficiency, from what looked from their graph like somewhere around $12 trillion to roughly $30 trillion. So there's a huge challenge to, you know, but it's an implicit recognition that actually that change can come, and that the financial system has the power to do it. And the point is that the financial system is working with our money. You know, we put money into a bank, the bank's using that, they're lending that money on. We put money into a pension fund, the pension fund's investing it. It's our money. And it's a huge amount of money as well. I mean, there's about 1.6 trillion, so 1.6 million, million pounds in UK savings and current accounts. There's about 2.2 trillion pounds in our pension funds. And I think the ONS, the Office for National Statistics, quotes something like £7 trillion of personal savings and pensions and investments and so on attributable to individuals in the UK. So that's £7 trillion of our money sitting out there with banks and financial institutions. What are they doing with it? And, you know, are we happy with what they're doing with it? Do we even know?
It's funny you put it like that, because I have to say it's really obvious. Of course, the banks it's our money that the banks are using, but I'd never thought about it in those terms, that they are, or they should be, accountable to the people who invest their money with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big thing for Triodos. So we talk a lot about transparency. And the reason that you weren't aware of that is because of the lack of transparency in the financial system. So there are two banks in the UK that disclose who they lend to. So there's us and Charity Bank, who, you know, we publish a list. So if you go to knowwhereyourmoneygoes.co.uk, you will see a list of all of the organisations that Triodos Bank lends to, and all of the companies that that Triodos Bank invests in through, you know, around the globe. So you'll see, you know, all the microfinance companies that we're investing in. You'll see places like Hawkwood, in fact, which is a customer, you know, and it's really nice. And if you have a current account with Triodos and you have our banking app, you open up your banking app and actually you can look and you can see which customers are close by. So if you, you know, fancy a coffee with somebody that happens to be a customer, you can go, oh, I'll go and use a Triodos customer. Hurrah!
Really local banking,
then. Absolutely. Well, it's that transparency, and I think you're not alone. You're absolutely not alone. I mean, we did a survey a few years ago, which I can't remember, something like only 30% of people knew that that the banks actually did anything with their money other than stick it in a vault. But actually, that's how the financial system works. It's the lifeblood of the financial system. You know, the money flows around it. When you're not using it, the only reason that banks can pay you interest is because they're earning interest off lending on to somebody else. So, you know, it is how the financial system works. But lots and lots of people, it's just not very transparent. And even if people know that that's in theory what banks are doing, it's really hard to find out actually specifically who are they lending to. There is some good news on that front. There's a thing called the Task Force for Climate-Related Disclosures, I think TCFD, does that work? It's a global task force, and they are working to get companies, actually, including banks and so on, to disclose more where, you know, what is the carbon impact of what they're, you know, what they're actually doing. But actually getting banks to list where their money's going. So you might see that there's a sort of massive carbon footprint from their lending, but they still probably, you know, there's nothing yet that's showing, that I'm aware of, that's showing, you know, yeah, banks are going to tell you where the money goes. So that lack of transparency really, it helps, you know, people to kind of turn a blind eye, really. And what we're trying to do is you know, force people to have their eyes opened a bit.
In a similar vein then, what are the kind of changes that you'd like to see happen to the financial services in this country or globally?
Ooh, wow. I'd like financial services to be more transparent, more clear about what impact they have, good or bad. So I'd like people to be able to find out where their bank is lending the money. I'd like people to be able to find out more easily where their pension is being invested, and to understand both the positive and negative consequences of those decisions that are being made on their behalf. You know, because I think most people don't want to do harm, and they would be really concerned if they knew that their investments were doing harm. But unless we actually make it really obvious, they won't be aware and they won't be able to do anything about it. I think the thing, I suppose the analogy that I would draw is that when the fair trade movement was trying to get people really enthused about fair trade, one of the things that really worked was making it very obvious to people the person at the other end of the supply chain, the coffee farmer in Bolivia or Kenya or wherever, and the impact that buying a fair trade product could have on that farmer. So you're kind of putting a face to the problem. Charity appeals do the same thing. You know, you think of Red Nose Day or Children in Need. You know, you see a celebrity there with a project and you think, oh yeah, my money's going there. It's helping that person. What that lack of transparency in the financial system does is it obscures both the positive and negative impact that people's money is having, and therefore the impact of their own choices on who they trust to look after that money for them. And if people saw that and were aware of that, they might act differently. Because as I say, most people don't actually want to do harm.
Do you think it's partly that lack of transparency, along with the financial crisis, that's made so many people quite angry towards banks and the financial sector?
I think so. A lack of transparency and a lack of actual or perceived fairness as well. You know, there's a feeling that that bankers are over rewarded. So another aspect of our own transparency is that we disclose the ratio of our chief executive salary to the lowest salary in the bank. Was it the midpoint? I can't remember. It's either the midpoint or the lowest. And it's only about like 10 times or something. You know, it's really not a big ratio. And you might have seen, you know, there's more pressure now to get companies to disclose that sort of thing. We've been disclosing it for years, and it's not that big of a ratio. So whereas for big banks, it is bigger. you know, I mean, there's been a hoo-ha recently about the chief executive of Standard Chartered, who ironically actually is you know, quite a kind of decent bloke, and he's compared with some, he's not vastly overpaid, but he does get a very, very high salary. I mean, up in the, you know, several millions. And, you know, is that really, really justified? But that's a purely personal view. And that was why I left, you know, mainstream financial services, if you like, or, you know, the international version of it. But, yeah, so I think fairness is something. But I think the biggest thing is actually impact. If we could mobilise that £7 trillion of, you know, of assets that really belong to individuals in the UK, and all of that was being focused on things that had a positive social or cultural or environmental impact, just think of the difference it could make. And, you know, climate change is, you know, we really need to be taking action very, very quickly. And banks and investment companies and so on continuing to pour money into fossil fuels is just going to continue making the problem worse. You know, we've only got 12 years, is it, to act to hold the climate change below 1.5 degrees. I can't remember exactly, but you know, we need to be acting really, really quickly to get this, you know, to get this moving. And just imagine if we could mobilize that $7 trillion.
You mentioned earlier that when you first got into the financial sector, it was the age of you know, greed is good. Was that something that at the time resonated with you and you've turned against, or was that something that always made you uncomfortable?
No, it always made me uncomfortable. I mean, actually, sort of, I qualified in London, you know, as an accountant in the middle of all of that, and shortly after getting married, we decided to move out of London because we kind of didn't really like the way that London worked, but also because we didn't want to, we felt we had a choice between, we either live in the centre of London and have a reasonably short commute but not such a good quality of life, or we live a long way out of London and have a nice quality of life, you know, in terms of home life, but then a nasty commute. And we thought, well, actually, we don't want to bring a family up, you know, start a family and have a bring a family up in London. So it was a purely personal choice. And I kind of accidentally found my way into financial services because that was the first job that I found when I came out of London, and actually, you know, so it was part of Standard Chartered, as it happens, and it did actually quite like the ethics of that bank and its UK subsidiary mostly, but even then, I was starting to see, you know, some of the ways that you know, that insurance was sold with financial products. You know, you're sort of thinking, what was that? how thoroughly does that, you know, does that work right? And also some of the interest rates, you know, you start to think, well, is it right? You know, somebody has to pay that much if they're at that much risk of default. Is it, you know, should they even be borrowing in the first place? And so I was sort of, but that's the way that the financial system works. And a lot of people would say, well, yeah, that's fine. You know, that's just the way it works. And that was the sort of the start of a slight discomfort, I suppose. Yeah.
So the name of this podcast is Stories That Matter.
Right.
So is there a story that can be from your life or that you've heard, fiction or fact, that has kind of influenced what you're doing now?
Actually, yeah, no, I can think of two. Okay, so they're just kind of little things, really. So one is just on an ethics course once. Somebody said a really good way of thinking about what you're doing in business is, are you comfortable for that to be on the front page of a national newspaper, and are you comfortable telling your gran that you've done it? Because, you know, because those are quite good yardsticks of whether, you know, if you feel uncomfortable with either of those, then the chances are it's probably not, you know, it's not a good thing to be doing. And a lot later, I was at a conference about banking, and somebody, I can't remember who, but somebody fairly senior in the world of banking, possibly even one of the regulators, said, wouldn't it be good if bankers did the right thing because it was the right thing to do? And, you know, so much is about the motivation of money or, you know, either personal wealth or corporate wealth or career advancement or career protection or whatever. And wouldn't it be nice if bankers just did the right thing because it was the right thing to do? So socially useful banking, if you like. And the other is just, it's actually the quote that I finished with in my talk just now. So there's a guy called, there was a guy called the Reverend Sidney Smith, who lived in the late 18th century, early 19th century. And there's a couple of quotes I like from him. So the first one, which just proves he's a really wise guy, says that marriage is like a pair of shears, that they are so joined that the two parts are always moving in opposite directions, but always punish anyone that comes between them. So this guy's clearly wise, and what he also said was, it is the greatest mistake to do nothing because you can only do little. Do what you can.
Thanks for listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. To find out more about Hawkwood and Seed Festival, follow the links in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do share it with your friends. This episode was produced by Laura Bing, with music by Daisy and her Cora, playing an original composition, Berta.